This podcast was made possible by the Heising-Simons Foundation. The Center on Enhancing Early Learning Outcomes at the National Institute for Early Education Research presents Legacy 2030, Pioneers in Early Childhood Education. On this episode, we speak with Linda Espinoza, Professor Emeritus of Early Childhood Education at the University of Missouri, Columbia. Linda, what research and experiences influenced your career?
Well, I would have to say that when I was an undergraduate, I was in special education. And in those days, behaviorism and Skinner were a big deal. And so my first forays into public education really were from a behaviorist point of view. And we trained the children to be able to recognize the letters and the sounds of the letters and put them together. We had tremendous results at the end of the kindergarten year. They learned all of that very quickly, but they didn't know how to think. And I realized I'm not teaching them to think about the world in a way that's very important to their future and is really the basis of education. So I had these doubts about what is the correct theory of how children learn, and as a teacher, how do I need to apply that, you know, for young children? And this is a true story. It propelled me into graduate school. I applied for a scholarship. I got a scholarship to Harvard, and there, that Department of Education was very developmental. So we learned about constructivism and Piaget and theorists that were anti-behaviorists. It was an anti-behavioral school, but it was a struggle for me to reconcile these two different perspectives of child development. I would say for about 3 or 4 years, I really studied that. And it wasn't until I was kind of at the end of my graduate career that I was able to integrate them and think about them in much more of a holistic concept or structure.
What is most important but least understood about effective early childhood education, particularly for disadvantaged children?
When I started running schools, I saw many of these children were, their parents were first level immigrants. They recently had come to the United States. They didn't speak English. Their children didn't speak English. And at that time, we really had no guidance in how to design programs. And I would say the least understood part of their education is really the significance and the importance of that first language. I think intuitively, we jump to the conclusion that when English enters the picture, that's all they need. And once they start to show some progress in English, then it doesn't matter if that first language drops away. And that's absolutely not empirically supported at all. That first language, that first culture has a significant role in their later reading achievement in English.
What changes in early childhood education policies do you think would make the most difference for young children who are dual language learners?
Well, to my way of thinking, they're not that terribly difficult to understand, but they're difficult to implement. And I think the primary principle that everybody working in early childhood needs to understand is that children's first language is critical. But exposure to English is also critical during those pre-K years. So you need to have systematic and ongoing support for developing the first language, and you need to have sufficient attention to English by at least 3 in order for that child to develop in a balanced bilingual way so that at kindergarten they have, hopefully, close to age-appropriate skills in both languages, and they're well on the path toward full bilingualism down the road. Because, I mean, one of the things that we really do know is that children who have well-developed 2 languages at kindergarten entry outperform every other group. So they outperform monolinguals in English. So having a second language helps you in some metalinguistic and cognitive fashion that monolinguals don't really have access to because they've always only learned one language. So in my mind, once you kind of know all of this about the extraordinary gift of early bilingualism, then the way in which we think about children who don't speak English and come into our schools typically is, well, there's a problem there because he doesn't know English. We need to reverse that and say, here's a potentially gifted child, because this child knows the language.
Linda, what is your proudest accomplishment?
I would have to say, if I looked at the state of California, the whole state, in the last 12 years, it has done 180 degrees on its approach to dual language learners. 10 years ago, I was on an advisory board, and they told me the only thing you can talk about, Linda, is English. You may never mention home language. But anyway, so between that time, I can tell you the exact date that that happened, and now California has moved to their first preferred program is a dual language program. And I would like to say I contributed to that, you know, that you have to be willing to go against the grain and to, and I won't say the names of the people that I went up against, but there were several people who were very insistent that you did not need anything around the home. So for me to oppose that and offer a different perspective on how to best meet their needs, I mean, it felt a little isolating and a little like I'll probably never get asked back. But on the other hand, like a superintendent once told me, never be afraid of being fired if you think you're right and children will benefit. The other thing was our transitional kindergarten. We literally started the first transitional kindergarten in California. Nobody was doing it. Ramon Cortinas, who was the superintendent, who had been my superintendent in San Jose Unified School District, hired me to do this, design this transitional kindergarten program. And so we did, and we took our time and we designed it. And after a year, the state adopted it, wrote legislation, passed it, and now it's mandated for the whole state of California. There was never a thought in my mind that this was something that would be picked up statewide, that people would see the benefits of it.
What gives you hope for young dual language learners?
Well, from 10 years to today, I'm totally filled with hope. I mean, because we have come so far. I was serious. People do not push back on the basic concept anymore. They just don't. Whereas 10 years ago, they did not want to hear it. And so I think the fact that it has had widespread acceptance about first and second language acquisition on a conceptual level, I think we've moved there as a public. The people that I see who are working in the field, we don't have nearly enough, but the people that I see are excellent. So, I'm at the stage in my life where I'm really looking for people who can be the leaders, you know, that will carry on this work. And we have some really excellent people that give me tremendous hope for the future.
Thank you, Linda. The Center on Enhancing Early Learning Outcomes at the National Institute for Early Education Research would like to thank the Heising-Simons Foundation for its support of the Legacy 2030 Pioneers in Early Childhood Education Project. For more information about CELO's Legacy 2030 project, visit our website, celo.org/celo-legacy-2030. Thank you.